Thursday, April 27th, was one of those tremendous staccato days in the White House, which left me exhilarated and satisfied and exhausted, and against which other days are soft music. I had breakfast early. The first appointment of the day was at 10 o'clock in the Queen's Room, with Liz and Nash and Mary Lasker, people from the National Geographic, to discuss another book, another White House publication, this one on flowers of the White House and flowers in Washington. They wanted me to write the script. I am concerned lest we be competing with our other publications. They had a mock-up prepared. It was beautiful, very enticing, and I wanted to do it. The barrier, would I have time to do it myself and do it well? There's something revolting about having someone else do it for you and then signing your name. And then I must check it with my always advisors, Carol and Abe, to see if there's any reason why not. A little past 11, I went down to the library for pictures with Bob Dowling. He has just given to the White House a tent that can be used in the Rose Garden, thereby extending the square footage of this house. We used the Rose Garden in brawling days in the summer, and on threatening days when the likelihood of showers gives Bess and me nervous tension. And a tent like this, with variations, it can be lined with pink and decorated with flowers, will be a lifesaver. And then the big event of the day took place. At 11:30, I met the guests who were coming for the bus tour and luncheon, the members of my committee and of the Society for a More Beautiful Capital, the donors, the possible donors. I wonder if ever before bus tours were a big part of a First Lady's life. They seemed to be of mine. The purpose was to show them what had been accomplished in Washington in the 2 years and 2 months that the committee has been in operation, the things their generosity has made possible. The 89 squares and circles and triangles where the streets come together, the legacy of L'Enfant, the 9 schools we've done, the entrances, the freeway planting, the work for the future on Haynes Point. I shall love to come back 10 years from now and see what it looks like. And on New York Avenue, our big failure on Rhode Island, a half-hearted attempt on F Street by the merchants, the whole kaleidoscope of the city. There were 5 buses. Stew narrated on one. We had a lively script poetically put together by Sharon, who narrated another. Jane Freeman did a wonderful job on a third. Sharon, I think, was a star, although Nash is hard to beat. And Katie Lockheim did the fifth. Among the 200 or so guests, there were the ladies of my speaker's bureau, Lindy Boggs and Marvella Bye, and Mrs. John Sherman Cooper. This, I hope, is as nonpartisan as you can get. And there was the press who covered the beautification beat, Betty Beale, Roberta Harnig, Harold Seacrest, and Wolf von Eckhart, whose knowledge and heart are so deeply entwined in it, though I dare say he thinks we are pretty superficial. And there were great and little donors, Roger Stevens, who gave some crabapple trees on Pennsylvania Avenue, and Gay Brooke Astor, who is doing Buchanan School, a staggeringly large project, $700,000. Dr. Peter Bing, who's giving the playground equipment for Georgetown Park. And David Burpee, who gave us 50,000 package of flower seeds for schools. An old friend, Mr. Burton of Burton's Nursery, who started off our first school. And Robert Inch of the S. Klein Company, to whom Nash goes back time after time when he just can't complete a project. Mrs. Morris Kafitz, whom we hope, and I think it's already signed up, will do a fountain by the Smithsonian. And Joseph Danzansky, president of Giant Stores, who's already working on his second well-landscaped supermarket, an enthusiastic pioneer, and darling Phyllis Dillon, whom we hope we can interest, and Pearl Mester, and Lloyd Garrison of the Taconic Foundation, the couriers before their tragic death, had made a real stamp on our committee. I was surprised to see the Leonard Goldensons there. And then I remembered, if anything, presented our story to the nation, it had been the ABC show. And Kay Graham, the Post and her own foundation are doing 2 schools, and their consistent, knowledgeable reporting is, I believe, building this into the consciousness of this city, this wave, this feeling of working on a more beautiful Washington. A moderate-sized donor and a very useful guest was Linda Bird, who, along with me, changed buses at every stop. There were 5, and first and last, we rode on every bus. The Fred Langs from Texas, to my great pleasure, have been fairly substantial helpers. The David Lloyd Kriegers and Polly Logan, we hope to draw more into the circle of real commitment. And the Willard Marriotts, who worked both ways, that is, they gave some beautiful planting for the circle at the end of, I think it's Key Bridge, but he's still going ahead with his plan to put up a huge sign on top of his inn. And Scooter and Dale, who through the inaugural committee are making one of the handsomest gifts, about $42,000, I think. And I was so pleased to see Mrs. George Maurice Morris, with whom I'd had such a delightful time on Sunday. It was a fun crowd. I knew nearly everybody. I wanted to talk to nearly everybody. We all had so many interests in common. It was like firecrackers going off all at once in all directions. Alas, the weather was not with us. Not the golden, brilliant day we'd looked for. Yes. And there are little kids chasing each other across the park. And parents sunning on a bench with a newspaper over their face, and government girls eating lunch, and lovers sitting in the grass by a fountain holding hands. No, the sky was dreary, but the tulips were a great splash of color everywhere, and the azaleas on Pennsylvania Avenue, and it was a satisfying, useful trip. And in many cases, I felt that electric spark of interest, excitement, hope, running. Actually, I would have liked to grab the microphone and be the tour director myself. Enthusiasm bids me, but I know I am not as articulate as Sharon or as well-founded in facts as Nash Castro. Little rolls and coffee were served on the buses, and the script didn't interfere with a little lively chatter among the guests, so many of whom knew each other. We were back at the White House by 1, and I had time to go upstairs and change from my red suit, that useful coat and dress by Marquise, to my blue silk with the lovely turquoise pin from Brazil. Amusingly enough, now that I'm in my 50s, I'm actually getting interested in jewelry. And then back downstairs for a cocktail and into the state dining room for lunch. Once more, Bess had done a charming job of decorating it. There were the topiary trees and boxes. We'd used them the night before for the diplomatic reception. And the thin, bare branches of the birches, artistically decorated with big Mexican paper flowers in every shade of pink. I enjoyed telling the guests that they were left over from Lucy's wedding, had been used at Linda's dance for the princess, and to decorate the buses when we took the 50 governor's wives out. The head of the meal was the dessert, a real little earthenware flower pot filled with ice cream from which rose a real spring flower. This we had borrowed from Neiman Marcus. My table was great fun with Lawrence Rockefeller, Polly Shackleton, and Mary, John Heckinger, and Mrs. Lloyd Garrison, Phyllis Dillon, and Nat Owings, and Francis Saul, who is a part of the family of Rosales, out of town today, who is one of our most generous donors, the big gift for the West Ellipse. At the end of the lunch, I thanked them. Every one of you here has added something special to this city. I wanted to thank you for the time, conviction, and creativity you have put into it, and have you see some of the results. And a small statement of our aims. We can set a few examples, be the catalyst, add a few ingredients. And then about my own personal reaction. The deeper I get into this, the more concerned I become. The more I see with new eyes, take more delight in those things that are beautiful in what we have accomplished. And have more impatience and yet more hope about all the things that need to be done. Steele Udall talked on the national implications of our work, and Lawrence Rockefeller made the best talk, in my opinion, on beauty and the business community. We are going to try to expedite the trend of varying power distribution lines. Then we are going to concern ourselves about air pollution through the use of atomic power plants. He was brief, substantive, right to the point, and left me feeling hopeful. And then Walter Washington talked on the inner city neighborhoods, what cleaning up and painting up and planting can do to keep the city cool, baby, to keep down that spirit of frustration and hostility whose final fruit is riots. A rather unnerving thing happened right in the middle of the luncheon. Lloyd Garrison came over to me and said, I've just had a phone call, and I shall have to leave early. A body has been washed up on a beach in Puerto Rico, and they think it might be Audrey Curia. That's a long crucifixion for that family to have to endure. It was over about 3:30,
And I had that happy, elated feeling that it was a success. I went upstairs for just a brief rest and work on mail with Ashton, and changed clothes to a green dress for the 4-H, and then downstairs for a receiving line with what was supposed to be 150 young people, and I think must have turned out to be 350. First, there were pictures, and they gave me a big bouquet of flowers, and then a pen that signified I was a partner in 4-H, and very happy to be. And a bound copy of a report on their activities in conservation and beautification. And then I stood in line and met them all.
A brief chat here and there
about where they were from.
A happy word of recollection with several whom I remembered had come down to the ranch right after Christmas, especially Stephen Pierce, who was co-chairman of the Youth Beauty Conference.
There were two words very much in evidence.
Crud, which at first sounds alarming, but is really an anti-litter drive organized by Loretto Shadow of Ruston, Louisiana, and gets right down to the business of cleaning up her town, enthusiastically engaged in by young 4-H people. And the other word, MAD, which is mobilization against debris, the same sort of a project headed by Steve Mullen in Raleigh, Massachusetts. I like 4-H youngsters. They are as clean and fine and wholesome a group of young people as this country produces. I look at them and I feel hopeful. I went into the state dining room with them and found the cookie platters were devastated, though the punch bowls managed to stay full. I spoke to German and Johnny about getting more cookies. They gave me a despairing look and departed for the pantry.
Not only is our money for entertaining running low, our fiscal year ends the last of June,
but we'd really only expected 150 or 200. Maybe one gets revved up by the mounting excitement, the intensity of the work of a day like this, when you try to make a sort of contact with each of several hundred people. But I felt moved to take the microphone and thank them for their work in conservation and beautification, and tell them how much I thought of the 4-H. It was nearly 6 when I was back upstairs to change my clothes quickly, to go over to Lyndon's office and say goodbye. And
then a strange trio we, in the back seat of the big black limousine, Father Snyder in his broad-brimmed black hat, looking like he'd stepped right out of a Dutch portrait,
Holbein or Hogarth.
And we were off to Andrews and into a Jetstar for a pleasant ride, 2 drinks, a sandwich, twilight while I read the story of Santa Vittoria, and relaxed and came down over the mountain that had been the work of this day. And then at 9:30 Texas time, oh, the wonders of jet travel, we came to a stop in front of the hangar. And there was Clarence Ganetch, and I found to my delight that Lyndon had taken him to Germany too. What a remarkably thoughtful man he is. It would be a lifetime memory for both Father Snyder and Clarence and Fritz, and they all greeted each other in German, and James carried my luggage on in the house, and I went to bed in the West Carnation room, completing my mission of testing out all of our guest rooms to see what was the matter with them, what was good and bad. And here I certainly found something. The reading light way on one side of the bed, the telephone pads, pencils, place to put cigarettes on the other.
You would keep wallowing across if you wanted to both read and smoke.
I went to sleep with that truly satisfied feeling of having spent a day of my life well, maybe accomplished a little something, certainly enjoyed it.